A Wind Down Media programming exclusive. KVYN 99.3 FM.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show on 99.3 The Vine, KVYN. I'm Barry Martin, and we are about to embark on a conversation with candidates for District 1 supervisor's job in Napa County. We have three of four candidates here with us today. Joelle Gallagher is in a meeting that could not be changed regarding Planning Commission duties, but we do have joining us in studio David Graves, Garrett Hale, and Suzanne Truchot. And good morning to all three of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here today. Let's begin, like we always do, with some kind of an opening statement. As I mentioned off the air, we have a little more time than we had in previous forums that we've done, so we can allow a couple of minutes, a more casual pace. And let's start alphabetically. You happen to sit down alphabetically for me, so we'll start with David Graves.
Thanks, Barry. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for listening. I've lived in District 1 since 1985. I like to say this, a veteran of the wine industry, a grizzled veteran, now retired from Saintsbury out in Carneros. But I've also had a lot of public service, planning commission, and just finished up as chair of the groundwater plan committee. So I think we have several issues that are important for the board to face. First is, the wildfire issue. We really have to have a comprehensive long-term response to the threat of wildfire. I'm a supporter of Measure L. It will have a lot of benefits, not only for people who live in the more wildfire prone areas, but also for everybody in the whole county, just because of the disruptions caused by smoke and this is the danger of fires. I also think we need to have a comprehensive response to the climate crisis. I just see that the LA Times this morning says, with water running out, California faces grim summer of dangerous heat, extreme drought. We really need to have a comprehensive response to both water availability and how we're going to respond to reducing our climate footprint and adapting to the changes that are inevitably coming. And finally, the ever popular themes of the shortage of affordable housing. Our workforce housing supply is woefully inadequate compared to the demands that we have placed on it by our employers. And we also, of course, need to continue to work on our transportation improvements, both locally and cooperating regionally.
Very good. That's David Graves. And let's next hear from Garrett Hale.
Good morning. Thank you. Garrett Hale, I've been in Napa 54 years, born and raised here, and have been involved in construction, in real estate finance, and MedMal Insurance, retail, a few other companies. But I've mostly been involved in the construction business for the last 37 years. I've owned Pacific Electric. And had a chance to work with the community on various levels, from, I always say, from bookkeeping to backhoe work. And looking at the issues today, seem to be the hot topics, is our, of course, our housing, our groundwater, and our fire issues. And we're really at a critical point where we have so much pressure from the state of California to grow our RENA numbers, which is our housing numbers for our growing population. But we really have to look at the critical resources that we have. And I'm all about solutions when it comes to, say, our homeless. I've hired four different homeless people from the county of Napa who went on to become school teacher, own a fly fishing business, work at Central Valley, and the other went into the electrical union. So I think that if we work collaboratively together and collectively from an A to Z program, we can definitely make a great impact on the homeless. And regarding housing, workforce housing is something that we don't talk about enough. Workforce housing can be part of an integration of a hotel or of a winery. And I really want to look probably one of the few that's looking back into the county because the property is already owned. So we have less impact, less cost impact to the county. But by having those new casitas, we're actually able to have a sustainable living where we can take the groundwater, recycle all the gray water, put it back into the vineyards, and take the waste and burn that off like they do in other countries, and really be an example of how to do it right.
That's Garrett Hale, and opening statement now from Suzanne Truchard.
Thank you, Barry. Good morning, everyone. I'm so happy to tell you a little bit about myself and why I'm running for Napa County Supervisor. As many of you know, I am the daughter of Cuban immigrants. My family lost everything to Fidel Castro's revolution, and overnight their property was nationalized. They arrived in the U.S. with just their suitcases in hand and the clothes on their backs. They started over, and at a young age, I learned the value of hard work, family, grit, and community. These values are what have driven me throughout my life and changed the trajectory of my life. I graduated with honors from Harvard University with a degree in health policy. I am one of the founders of the Harvard Health Policy Review, which is now a globally recognized publication. I then pursued my law degree at Northwestern, from where I graduated with a service distinction. As an attorney and community leader, I led a group of concerned citizens to oppose an out-of-town developer that threatened our precious water resources and habitats. That experience taught me the importance of being engaged in the governmental process. We were successful in defeating the project, but by one narrow vote. Individuals in elected office can truly shape the landscape of Napa forever. I saw the impacts that our efforts had then, and I found myself getting more involved in our community and seeing we need bold leadership to get things done. Instead of roadblocks and creative solutions, instead of roadblocks and arbitrary decision making, we should have collaborative and creative solutions to local problems, be it climate change, housing, or any other issue that we face as a county. We need leaders that will create outcomes, not committees and task forces. As supervisor, I will implement solutions, tangible solutions that protect our environment to make certain our children and future generations can afford to live in the very place they grew up. I am incredibly thankful that the community has taken all of these components together about who I am and believes in my leadership. People from District 1 are ready for fresh ideas, invigorating energy, and new leadership. As a mother, a business owner, and a member of the community, I want to see the next generation live in a Napa that has protected its natural resources and maintained its commitment as a national leader in land and agriculture preservation. In order for that to happen, we do need to have mindful leadership and reasonable policies countywide. And for these reasons, I ask for your vote and your support on June 7th. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you. And I'm going to stay with you, Suzanne Truchard, for the first question. We'll have several rounds of questions on basic topics. But I'd like to ask each of you today to address this. Was there a moment, a decision, a situation, something that happened that motivated you to run for this office?
Sure. That's easy. I alluded to that in my opening remarks. So what pushed me was these interactions with local government when we were dealing with a developer for Napa Oaks, which is when they wanted to put 54 cookie cutter homes in the agricultural green belt, dividing the city and the county. For a variety of reasons, that project was flawed. There were fault lines, environmental habitats, water, view shed, etc. And sitting through those hearings, it hit me that there are decision makers that can shape the landscape of Napa forever. We defeated them, but it was by one narrow vote. And so that was one. And then interactions with the county, thinking about how we can streamline processes, whether it's with the zoning department, with Public Works, all these departments that we have the potential to create, fix what's going wrong, and keep going on what's going right. So it was sort of a cumulative build. And when I learned that the incumbent was retiring, I felt that the opportunity was ripe for fresh leadership. I talked to many community leaders that were excited about my candidacy, and here we are.
Same question for you, Garrett Hale. Was a particular moment or issue, situation that made you decide to run?
Well, the particular moment came over the last few years as I have watched many of my friends move out of state, out of county. And as we discussed about the various deteriorating problems here within the county or the state, it really came to a point of, are you going to do something, or are you just going to talk about it? I was asked by many in the county here to run for county supervisor. in that I have experience on solutions. I've always run businesses. I'm accountable for the bottom line. And working within the different administrations throughout the Valley, I definitely see room for improvement, room where we can expedite processes, reduce outsourcing and consulting, and do a better job, more efficient job, where we can take those saved monies and move them into other categories. I also would like to see more of a performance budget, incentivize those agencies to work on performance as opposed to a zero balance, so that, again, we're not spending money each year just so that we get that same funding the following year.
That's Garrett Hale. Same question for you, David Graves.
There wasn't a single moment for me. It's been kind of a slow build. Certainly, serving on the Planning Commission, I was Brad Wagenknecht's first Planning Commission appointee. At that time, already watershed issues were building. We had the Watershed Task Force that turned into the Watershed Information Center and Conservancy, the WIC, on which I served several terms. The climate change issue, again, that was a slow build. I'm a alumnus of the climate reality training that has given me a lot of tools to understand both global and regional issues related to climate change. Certainly water, I'm a board member of the Napa Sanitation District. We deal with a lot of water resources. Obviously, we treat wastewater, but we also recycle. We're a wonderful resource going forward for more water. We run a $40 million enterprise, touches pretty much everybody's life. You only notice it when it doesn't work, but it's a very important resource going forward. So all these pieces, I think, come together to make it so that I think I can make a really good supervisor.
Very good. I'm going to give Garrett Hale a chance to be first in responding to the next question. And I'd like to talk now about Measure L and the wildfire prevention issue. The first part of the question is obviously, and some of you have already stated this, do you support Measure L, which is an increase in sales tax to fund wildfire mitigation, diminish the impact of wildfires? And then the second part of the question is, some, including a listener who was just texting with me earlier this morning, feels that the county has adequate resources without any additional revenue to fund this program. They're just not willing to do that. So I'd like to have a response on those two aspects of this question.
Sure, absolutely. I think it's well known now that I don't support additional taxes typically when we talk about economic problems within our community. However, this is existential circumstances where we stand to lose so many more homes. We have kindling basically left. It's like having an entire forest of charcoal as we currently stand. And when I do the calculations, just assume that, say, the average person is spending $2,000 a month on goods, taxable goods, comes down to about $5 a month. I'm more than happy. I've talked to other business owners especially for this issue, more than happy to add to our employees' wages to compensate that because of what could come with another fire. The massive amount of jobs, potential vineyard damage and whatnot that can have a huge impact on the local economy, that this is one of those times where we really need to look into doing the right thing. For the right reasons, and this is one of those. Regarding your second question, do we have the current resources? A lot of us feel, my campaign is about being more efficient with our processes here in the Valley and looking for more funds that would be available. But we don't have time. Not this time, we don't. This measure was put together quickly. We don't have anything else on the table to look at. We definitely haven't had a slush fund that we can pull from, so that's going to take time. One concern I do have, and I've voiced that a few times, is that regarding this measure, We really need to look and make sure that they're accountable for their expenses.
Very good. Let's go to Suzanne Truchard to respond on this Measure L, and could the county fund this with existing resources?
I, too, had my concerns about Measure L. I voiced that in a couple debates regarding about the public not being able to stomach another tax, even though it is a relatively small amount. And given gas prices and given everything that we are experiencing now, I think, you know, the general public is concerned. However, given what happened in 2017 and 2020, the economy here in Napa lost over $1 billion. It essentially froze during those treacherous moments where, you know, the valley was basically inundated in smoke for 10 days. So the way that Measure L was drafted does take into consideration the worker in that it excludes taxing, housing, healthcare, and groceries. For other reasons, Measure L makes us competitive for funding, for matching, for grants, and for other things. So it incentivizes us being able to obtain more monies on the state and federal level. So it's a complex structure. You know, even though the budget does allow for it right now, we could have something else happen, you know, in terms of pandemic, where we would need to move funds quickly from the county. So this gives us a steady and reliable source, and we can always revisit it once we've met our goals for the wildfire protection plan.
And the same question for David Graves.
The funds for Measure L will be spent as part of a framework that's been put together. It's called the Community Wildfire Protection Plan. The document's available online. It's quite extensive. It deals with all kinds of many aspects, evacuation route safety, making sure that fuel reduction around critical infrastructure is carried out. The general level of forest health is improved. So all these things require a long-term commitment, and they also will benefit from our ability to use our local funds as a local match with federal and state programs that often require a local match, as our Measure A flood project required a local match. That was why we had the half-cent sales tax for the flood measure. So I'm confident that there's accountability, there's a plan. Most of the money is spent locally, and that it will have a beneficial effect on the entire county by reducing these very disruptive events and improving our insurance rates, making it so that our housing stock is not under threat from fire. So I view it as a very much a net positive.
All right, very good. And we'll stay with you for the first response on the next question, which has to do with conflicts of interest. I think everybody who's informed on local issues know that this is part of the conversation now due to the Walt Ranch project and Supervisor Pedroza's seeming connections, and questions are being raised about conflicts of interest. One of our listeners earlier texted me along this line asking about how can people who work in the wine industry have clarity and avoid conflicts when most of what comes before the Board of Supervisors in some way is a wine industry issue. Can you speak to that from your own perspective? How I think it would be impossible in a small community not to be connected to some of the people who come before you, to have relationships that can be seen as conflicting. How do you deal with that?
I think there are two pieces to the issue, and the first is campaign finance is it's, as I have learned, it's very, very expensive to be a competitive candidate in even a local race like supervisor. We'll probably have somewhere on the order of maybe between 7,000 and 8,000 votes cast in the primary for District 1. The aggregate amount of money that's going to be spent is eye-watering. It's north of probably $50 a vote aggregate. That is, to me, that's the potential for a lot of questions about, well, who's funding you? So that's the first part. I think we need to have a lower contribution limit, and we need to have, I mean, we, thanks to the FPPC, we already have transparency, but it presents a problem. Second, as I mentioned earlier, I'm a veteran of the wine industry. I have a small interest in Sainsbury still. But I dealt with this when I was a planning commissioner. There is a very explicit case law about conflicts of interest, and I think it's very important that we avoid not only conflict, but the appearance of conflict. And as you pointed out, Barry, there's a notion of if it affects enough parts of the community, it's called the public generally exception. So the doctrine is that if an action affects a wide swath of the community, it's say on a land use rule, it's not participation in the decision making process is not excluded under California statute and case law.
Mm-hmm. A quick follow-up, and I'll ask each of you this. You mentioned reducing the maximum allowable contribution. Do you have a figure in mind for what that maximum should be?
Well, Mike Thompson gets by on $2,500 per donor per election cycle. I think that'd be a good place to start. We're at $4,900 now.
All right. Effectively in half.
Yes.
All right. Garrett Hale, same question, dealing with conflicts of interest.
Okay, we're on finally. Formerly being a CEO of a publicly traded company, I had a great responsibility for conflict of interest to the T. So for me, it's a very important subject. And here in the Valley, things are what they are right now with the campaign finance limits. Looking into the future, it would be nice, as I always say, as you know, running my campaign on merit over money, for the people to be able to look at all the candidates fairly across the board. I think we could look to a different platform. I will always do, and I think any of the candidates here will always do what's right for the community, as I've heard so often across the board. And that is our fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers, is to do what is best for the taxpayers and the community moving forward. Looking at the limits, I don't know if I would even go as high as $2,500, per. I think something more reasonable that could not be seen in any way, shape, or form as influential. Nobody wants to pay their pound of flesh once they get into office, and the community doesn't want that either. But I think looking into the future, if we had a set amount of limitations, where we could put signs, where we could do articles, how many forums we would have, and make those forums more open to the public. We've had a lot of closed forums, and people really haven't had a chance to hear a lot of these great responses from the candidates, and give the decisions back to the people to make their own cognitive decisions and less about the money.
And let's ask that same question of Suzanne Truchard.
Thank you. I'm the only attorney that is running for office, and as a member of the California Bar, we're actually held to a higher standard of ethics, and it's important to maintain those ethics, otherwise you risk losing your license. So for a variety of reasons, conflict of interest, we're well-trained in and well-versed in. It is true that we all have connections to the wine industry. It's inevitable living in Napa. However, I think that, as Garrett said, all the candidates would uphold themselves to the highest ethical standard. I have come before many, as a local land use and zoning attorney, you come before many boards, and when there's an issue, and this happens in all cities and towns and counties, if there is a concrete issue, the person has a duty to disclose and recuse himself. And I think that that's, the path that has been established here as well. In terms of campaign limits, I'm fine with setting it at wherever the community sees fit. I think $2,500 is reasonable. It is one of the unfortunate realities of running a campaign that it does require funding. But as long as it's a level playing field for everyone, I'm fine with whatever limit is set.
All right, very good. I think it's David Graves' turn to go first. We'll come to the next question in a moment. Let me reset real quickly. We're talking with candidates for supervisor in District 1. You just heard from Suzanne Truchard, Garrett Hale previously, and David Graves. The fourth candidate, Joelle Gallagher, not able to attend for this event due to Planning Commission duty. And I'd like to turn to a different topic. Everything is related and interlocked, but for David Graves to start, the Walt Ranch project has become one of those lightning rod projects, and it's a little bit like Napa Oaks was. You mentioned Suzanne a bit ago. It's a you could say a symptom or an indicator of a bigger issue, and the bigger issue now with what we know about climate change, and we're talking about carbon sequestration, all these other things. The bigger issue becomes: is it really the correct choice to expand and build new vineyards in places that are natural forest land, and just to boil it down to nothing else but that, to kind of strip away the economic questions, the right to develop land that you own under zoning and planning as it is? Is it the right choice to take trees away for a new vineyard?
I view the process that we use for planning vineyard developments as backward-looking, and it needs to be forward-looking. We need to have a process that is more on a watershed scale, looks to connect habitats from the inner coast range all the way into Sonoma County, because we're biogeographically one place in a lot of ways. We need to look at things like, what's the effect of, say, forest health measures on our wildlands? Because it will involve reducing the amount of vegetation, because as Garrett pointed out, we're overstocked. There's too much fuel out in the wildlands. So there are a lot of moving parts here, and I think to have kind of I think Walt Ranch is a symbol in a lot of ways of this process, but I think that you also have to look at the emission side of things in addition to the sequestration side. So we have to radically reduce the amount of emissions that we create with our tourism industry, with our buildings, our transportation system. So it all has to work together. I don't think it's a simplistic answer, unfortunately, but it does tend to become sort of almost like a slogan. I think we have to be careful about the Walt Ranch, because it may come before the supervisors going forward once the new board is seated. So rather than comment directly about the Walt Ranch, I think I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough and understood. And I'm going to break the pattern a little bit here and go to Suzanne Truchard next on this question.
Sure. And I think there's a lot of differing opinions on this. And the way that the code is written, I think that, you know, landowners have been following the process, and they keep hitting these roadblocks, and even though they've complied with everything. So that has been the frustration on the other side. One side, the other side, of course, is concerned about our climate, our environment, and rightly so. I think that it's become so polarized and so combative, and we need to hit sort of a reset button and figure out a way to collaborate and figure out the path forward and change the process if what we're dealing with are the effects of climate change. I have been in conversations with Napa Green and Napa Thrives to kind of bring the next generation of winemakers, grape growers, et cetera, to incorporate the six pillars of social equity, regenerative practices, implementing carbon farming, irrigation assessments, water use efficiency. There is an education component that's lacking in these. And I don't think anyone here wants to decimate Napa. It's our home. It's our precious resource. And for us, I think it's time to come to the table and figure out the path forward instead of attacks and dueling letters.
All right, Garrett Hale, your take on this.
All right, to stay on point with is it the right choice to just call it, what is it, strip our forests? Typically, no. We look at things like evapotranspiration and the effects of our watersheds. I haven't seen enough deep study, also talking about the carbon emissions that happen with the D8s, the other burning of the trees and whatnot. A lot needs to go into that. We are at, I'm just going to throw the bad word out there, moratorium. We are at a point where, because of our lack of resources, we really could be addressing those moratorium issues. However, we have two things that recently happened. One, the wildfires are a concern that, you know, could we do something like other states where we have strips throughout the valley where we could work hand in hand with environmentalists, the winery owners, those that want small vineyards that could do a land swap. So we had a swath, let's say every so often miles, up and over the valley where the transmission lines are. We could have dry farming. We could have a large water system that could be utilized for Cal Fire. There's many, many things that could come positive from that. And this is the one time where we could set aside and say, we can develop now where it makes sense to develop. We have a lot of burned trees that will not be part of that evapotranspiration, part of the watershed issue, because they're dead. Strictly, they're dead, they're gone. So this may be one time that we can all collaboratively work together and say, after this period, after we've done the right thing for the community and the right thing for forest fires, there will be moratoriums moving forward. But typically, to go and just strip green forest when we have such a climate issue already and a resource issue would not be the right thing.
I want to stay with you for the next question. Excuse me, talk a little bit more about resources. We all know that the term mega drought is being used now, a drought in California of historic proportions. Things are happening in Southern California that have never been seen before. Lake levels and so on, and water allocations being cut to zero in some places. We may not experience it living in towns like most of us do, but this California battle between agriculture and urban uses over water, you know, 100 and some years of that going on, right? The question becomes, with Napa's success so far in avoiding tapping groundwater for urban uses, do you foresee a time, if the mega drought continues, where that will not be the case any longer? And do you approve of, or would you be in favor of, that a point where cities cannot supply water to their residents, that groundwater supplies would become available for urban uses?
Wow, crisis by crisis. We're stuck because our economy relies very much on the wine industry. People's lives would be devastated if we lose that industry. So it's a tough question. Do you take water from the people and give it to the industry and support tourism and the industry? That could be looked at as we're only looking for the money. But that money is generated for a tremendous amount of our citizens here. So that's really a extreme tough question to make the decision. I think we need to get started now more than ever. I think people need to be more aware of the city programs like the lawn removal program that is good for up to $700. People got really excited about a $600 stimulus check, but if you take out 700 square feet of lawn, you get $700. And we really, really need to look into dry landscaping throughout the county to save a massive amount of water. We also need to look at preserving our water blow-off. They say that we only use 0.1% of our water usage for blow-off when they blow off the fire hydrants every winter for sediment in the water. But that 0.1%, from my calculations on the city website, would be enough to serve 250 homes 12 months out of the year. So during the summer months, talking about 500 homes, maybe 500 homes out in Carneros could have had water had we saved that water that they blew off last year.
All right, it's Garrett Hale. Let's go to Suzanne Trichard next on this water question.
Sure. We're hoping that the mega drought term doesn't stick, and we can figure out a solution soon. So for me, it's more about the relationship between the city and the county. The relationship between city and county should be a symbiotic one, not one where there's tension. And when elected supervisor day one, I will choose to eliminate that by interaction with them and getting feedback from city council members, from the mayor, and then bringing that back to the county side to figure out innovation for uses in water. I would see the ground tapping into the groundwater as a last resort. I think we have other avenues that we can explore before doing that. Many of them mentioned by Garrett in terms of reducing urban water usage, changing our landscapes, et cetera. And then on the county side, I think we have an opportunity to incentivize the use of recycled water and wastewater systems so that the wine industry also reduces its water. So it's sort of an integrative water management plan that I think can be implemented sooner rather than later before we tap into the groundwater sources.
Next to David Graves on the topic of the water supply.
All the cities and the water agencies and the county and the sanitation district have devised a drought contingency plan it was written with a grant from the U.S. Department of Interior. It foresees investments in better connections between the water systems, and it also foresees a really ambitious water reuse plan that can, if executed promptly, can actually supplement our water supplies in what's called a conjunctive groundwater use. We also need to have better use of flood flows, stormwater reuse, but the amount of water that the cities use is largely about, I mean, if you look at the difference between winter use and summer use, the amount of water the water use change is about landscape irrigation. So we really need to be thoughtful about improving our thoughtfulness about using water for landscape irrigation, and we can reduce that amount really substantially and in effect have free water just by conserving it. So I think that's a good place to look. But it's certainly a comprehensive city-county water use policy is definitely the future.
Very good. I like to offer the chance in these kinds of forums when time allows for each candidate to ask someone else a question, and we've reached that point. So I'm going to start with Suzanne Truchard this time, if you have a question for one of these other two candidates.
Thank you, Barry. Since David asked me one in the last forum, I'm going to go ahead and ask him one. So as you mentioned, you know, you've owned a winery for many years and now retired. But during your tenure as a winery owner, you were active in helping wineries grow and expand. But now as a candidate, you've sort of pivoted against ag and wine. And it's sort of, you know, I've already had mine. Now, you know, let's figure out no one else can. Can you talk a little bit about that and sort of your stance in general?
Could you clarify that? I'm a little bit unclear on what you're actually saying my history is.
So you were a winery, you were the owner of Saintsbury Winery, correct?
I was a shareholder in Saintsbury.
A shareholder. And during that time, you worked with other vintners and grape growers in sort of, you know, advocating and helped wineries grow and expand in that vintner community?
I was a planning commissioner. Is that what you're referring to? I'm not quite sure.
No, just being part of the winery community, the Napa Valley Vintners, et cetera.
Yes, I was a member of the wine business. Yeah. So let's not forget, like, about water use. Cardero's isn't now entirely irrigated with recycled water.
Right.
It does not use Saintsbury, the property that we have, is part of the recycled water system. We don't.
Right.
We have the potential not to use any groundwater or surface water for irrigating vines. So to me, that says that's a walk-the-walk situation of saying, you know what, we need to use less water. Let's do that.
Right. The perception is that as a candidate, you've sort of pivoted your stance and are moving sort of kind of not attacking, but sort of against the agriculture and wine industry.
I don't understand anything that I advocate that's against the agriculture or the wine industry. Could you point to something?
No, no, we'll leave it at that. That's just the perception that...
Well, I'm asking you, could you point to something I'm advocating that is anti-ag?
You're not a supervisor now, so as supervisor, that's what I wanted to know.
I've been pretty clear about what I'm advocating as a supervisor.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Very good. Good exchange. And I'll throw it back to you, David Graves. Do you have a question for one of these two candidates?
Well, I'm going to go back to the question I asked Suzanne in our Spanish language session here on Saturday, because you didn't answer it. I asked you if you've been endorsed by the Farm Bureau, and the president of the Farm Bureau wrote a letter to the editor of the Register saying that, as I'll shorten it, but that opposition to projects, for example, I think he was referring to the things like the Walt Ranch or winery projects, mm-hmm. somehow endangers the future of the entire wine and grape business in the county. I don't think I'm misstating that. And I'm asking if you agree with that stance or you think that's kind of a red herring or an extreme position.
No, I think as every candidate here went after the Farm Bureau endorsement, and I'm proud of that endorsement. They represent over 1,000 farmers and work hard to advocate for the community. And I think I did answer the question. You know, for me as a candidate, as supervisor, I will look at everything with a trained legal eye and follow the law. I do think that, unfortunately, their opposition that comes with every single project, when every landowner is following the law and you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, creates a chilling effect and disincentivizes the next generation of grape growers, of wine growers. There's a lot of young people that don't want to do business anymore. And they're leaving to Paso Robles, they're leaving to Sonoma. And so it's coming to a point where, you know, it's besides these, you know, wineries, the next generation cannot do anything. So we either need to change the process and figure out a path forward, or you know, it's just going to become more polarized, as we've seen in every public hearing related to wineries and vineyards.
All right, Garrett Hale, your chance to ask a question of one of the two.
So I wasn't questioned by either candidate. Should I ask both candidates a question?
Sure, why not?
Sure.
I'm not a controversial guy. I'm born and raised in Napa, and I like to promote a greater future here. I would ask a question to both Suzanne and David. Would you be in favor, since we are being pressured from the state to grow our housing numbers, would you be in favor if we created a mixed use on the property, let's call it a 10-acre parcel, where we were to put a berm, so there wasn't a visual impact, a berm with vineyards around the development with a complete gray water and wastewater recycling program that went back and watered the vineyards as well as any of the greenscape in that development? Would that be something you would promote?
David?
So let's imagine a hypothetical winery. For example, there are a lot of really creative water treatment systems for winery process water. In other words, the water that's used to wash the tanks and wash the floors and clean the barrels can be cleaned up enough to be then reused as irrigation water and displace, say, groundwater pumping or surface water for irrigation. The issue right now is that the State Water Board has issued some pretty stringent rules about how that water can be reused. And I think that we need to, the county will be administering that, I hope, rather than the state. But I think we need to be very aggressive in pushing back and saying we have adequate standards for assuring water quality. looking at the effect, if any, on groundwater quality, such that we safeguard our groundwater resource in case of reapplication of that water. So I think the technology is out there, and I think the will to do that is out there, because I think that the industry really feels that the water efficiency is job one for winery operations.
Okay, and Suzanne?
Yes, I worked on several creative mixed-use projects, and I think they're great. I think that, you know, doing that healthy mix of retail, affordable housing, and market rate housing is what we need. I've identified a couple of sites within city limits that I think have great potential to be reimagined, such as Napa Valley Commons, and creating that berm with vineyard would be a nice nice way to create the surroundings. I have my concerns regarding water, and I'm not afraid to push back on the state in terms of meeting those housing needs and to see if we can come up with a creative way, because if we don't have the water for the current uses for citizens then of Napa, then how do we build additional? So for me, I think it's that delicate balance of interacting with the state and finding that happy medium so that we grow in a thoughtful manner and not have this explosive growth, which I think many people are concerned about, and they already feel that it's gotten to that point.
All right, very good. I think I have time for one more question before we do closing statements. Stay with me on this one for a second. I'm no expert on these things, but to my understanding, Napa Valley and California in general has followed European models about growing wine grapes and making wine since the origins of California winemaking. We've looked to France, we looked to Italy and Spain and said, here are things that are being done, grapes that are being grown, wine being made this way, and we've all, you know, learned from it and benefited from it. But one thing that exists there that does not exist here is the kind of extreme regulation on the amount of vineyard that can be planted, even the types of grapes that can be planted in some regions, as you all know. Do you foresee a time when Napa, because of its small size and limited capacity, will need to say, we have planted all the vineyard that we can carry in this ecosystem, economically, however it might be? And I'm not sure whose turn it is to go first. I think maybe, Suzanne, it's your turn, so I'm going to go to you on that question. Do you foresee a time where we are at capacity and just nothing more can be allowed?
I think there may come a time when that's the case. I think wine regions around the world have their different issues. You know, for example, there's century-old vines that are planted in very, very steep hillsides, and there's never been erosion issues, but that's not allowed here. So you have to look at the region specifically. Will it get to a point that we have planted every corner of Napa? Possibly, but I don't know when that would be. I think it's going to be highly dependent on the steps we take as a community to fight climate change, to grow thoughtfully, and to build a better Napa.
All right. And Garrett Hale, what's your thought on that?
I think obviously we have to look around the world for experience, those who have traveled those roads before us. And hillside development has always been a question regarding erosion. But I've walked the vineyards in Italy. I've walked the vineyards in southern Germany and Austria, and they do a phenomenal job of erosion control. Those are more of like a gentleman vineyard where they're very tight, and you also see dry farming there, which is something I'm starting to hear more of, and what I would like to see is further development. Obviously, different vines that require less water, something that we would need to look at moving forward. But I am of the understanding if we do reach that point where we cannot grow, and it's simple supply and demand, that if we can't grow, your vineyards, your fruit is going to be worth more money, just like homes are worth more money when there's less supply and more demand.
Mm-hmm. All right. Dave Graves.
The process of developing the groundwater sustainability plan pointed towards for the first time, taking measures to actually measure groundwater use in the valley floor and take steps to have various tripwires of if certain groundwater depletion, or if certain trends of groundwater levels happen, that then there has to be a reduction in pumping. I think that's a metric where we should be very proud that we have that. We need to have the best groundwater plan in the country. And I think that's a part of having a sustainable grape industry, and one that is certainly not exploiting every corner of the watershed. I think economically that's unlikely, but I think with the kind of planning process I'm advocating, that we would have basically we'd set aside areas that are just too important for habitat, for wildlife corridor connectivity, so that we have a more thoughtful process. But I think in terms of our general plan, I was pleased to see that the process of developing more data for the next general plan is starting with the allocation of funds from the supervisors to begin writing what's called the baseline data report for the next general plan. And that'll have things like, where do we need to not go?
Very good. So let's go to closing statements now. David Graves will stay with you to go first.
I think I'm the best candidate for the District 1 supervisor slot because I have the combination of private sector experience and considerable experience in the kind of natural resource issues that we are facing. Our past success is no guarantee of our future success. We need to be very mindful of the effects of catastrophic climate change on the wine industry, on our water supply, on the wildfire threat that we face. We need to be building more housing as a response to that, because the nexus of climate change, of housing and transportation is very real. We see that every day at the on the roads out of the county, because we have a lot of workers who can't afford to live here. We need to move those people in here so that they're part of our community and their lives are part of our lives. We also need to be very, very aggressive in how we respond to reducing our emissions and mitigating the impact of climate change on our main industry, but also just our the safety of our community. So I believe that my experience in all those areas makes me best qualified to respond to that for not only the people of District 1, but the people of the entire county.
Thank you. And Garrett Hale.
Great. I look forward to being supervisor of Napa County and bringing my life experience to the table. I've had over a decade experience in mineral exploration in West Africa, where we had to deal with soils and replanting. I saw the effects of others who didn't care about the land that did strip deforestation, as we hear about strip mining, and the devastation that can have on the environment. And regarding our two communities, our American and our Hispanic community, for 37 years I've worked in the construction industry, and through the decades I've seen more and more Hispanic workers come within the workforce. In fact, my current three workers are Thomas Rodriguez, Mario Flores, and Rene Reyes. So I have a deep understanding, somewhat of a bilingual ability, to understand the needs of the Hispanic community. I've built many of my employees up to the point where they've went and started their own companies. And being that I do have a Hispanic background on my mom's side, they were from Guadalajara, I understand some of the different socioeconomic challenges here. And my experience with real estate construction financing can definitely play a role in some of the programs we're seeing now, like through Redwood Bank, where they're pushing more for the local Hispanic community, even those that just have an ITN number, to be able to have equity in Napa and actually purchase property under some of the new programs.
Thank you, Garrett Hale. And finally, Suzanne Truchard.
Thank you, Barry. As I stated earlier, local leadership has never mattered more. We are facing one of the most important elections that Napa has encountered in decades. We need leaders that understand the importance of sustainable agriculture while also allowing local businesses to grow responsibly. Those two, the idea of sustainability and prosperity, are not mutually exclusive. As many of you know, I grew up in very humble beginnings and had to fight hard for everything that I've earned. I promise to bring that same work ethic and work hard for the people of Napa. I've been knocking on doors for the last 10 months now, and the citizens of District 1 have made it clear they are ready for new leadership, for a fresh perspective, for something other than the usual. My background, legal training, and experience uniquely qualifies me among all the candidates to understand the complex agricultural, business, socioeconomic, and environmental issues that come into play in our valley. I'm thankful that other people recognize that, and I've been endorsed by former Mayor Jill Teckel, current council members Mary Louros and Bernie Narvarez, who is also president of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and many more to be announced. Now, if you ask any of my colleagues, family, friends, clients, and even my husband to describe me, the common thread is always, Suzanne is a problem solver, Suzanne gets the job done. I have always prided myself on the ability to execute with clarity of thought. When elected as Napa County Supervisor, I plan to do just that. And I look forward to working with all of you on a path forward for our Napa community. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today. Ballots go out next week, and it would be my honor to have your support and your vote honored before June 7th. Have a great day.
And that wraps up our forum for candidates in District 1 for Napa County Supervisor. Thanks to you all three for being here today. We do appreciate it.
A Wind Down Media Programming Exclusive, KVYN 99.3 FM.